So there was finally a two-quarter course in which the first quarter of the sequence was given in the fall, sorry, was given in the spring. And the next quarter of the sequence was given the following fall. And so a graduate course, I presume. And so instructor, so that was the first day of classes for the fall quarter with a bunch of new people in the class and proceeds to write on the board, corollary. Also, one of the comments from the first section today reminds me of, this didn't actually happen in one of my classes, but I was told that it happened in somebody else's calculus class, a homework for maybe an exam solution, in which some student claimed that some equation had two solutions, of which one was unique and the other was not. we're talking about proving classifiability, which again I remind you means essentially proving the hypotheses and classification theorems for cross products by minimal polymorphisms under an assumption on, first of all, finite covering dimension, and secondly, an assumption on the K-theory, which guarantees that one at least sort of expects that the cross products have real rank zero, although that actually doesn't come out. So, it was considering a special case of the center set. So, H, X, X is a minimal homomorphism. X, the center set. And I had proved several lemmas. Which I want to put back up. I guess I should remind you of the sum algebra that we're using. So A is cross product, and for Y in X, non-empty and closed, we're using the sum algebra A sub Y, which is the sum algebra of this, generated by C of X and C0 of X minus Y. In other words, it's just all the functions which vanish on Y times the standard unitary. So this is the standard unitary in the cross product. And this notation here we don't actually need, so this works for general X. But I'm not only going to, for the theorems, I'm going to assume, or the lemma so far was the matrix of Cantor set. And so the object was to prove, object for X of Cantor set to begin with was to prove that the cross product, and I'll just call it A, right? That A has partial natural. And here is what we had done so far. So, one lemma, I can prove this before, but I'll put it up anyway, I'm not going to prove it now. It suffices to show and this will also serve as a reminder of what threshold rank zero was, because it's pretty close to what I'm going to put down here. Or some S in A which generates A. This is an algebra. For all F in S finite, for all epsilon bigger than zero, for all non-zero positive elements, yes, there exists projection in A. And usually it's algebra B contained in PAP. So again, right, this is a usual algebra whose identity is P, and so the identity of B is also supposed to be P. Such that, with P and B, such that one no longer coming here A is P, is left epsilon for all A and F. Two is the distance from PAP to, oh, wait, I'm sorry, I got this wrong. This is how I'm actually doing things, this is how I'm going to put it. Usual AF algebra B, which contains P. BP is less than epsilon, so A in F. And 3 says that P is large, so 1 minus P is more even or equivalent to a projection in this relation you settle. By that element P. So just to recall, for traditional rank 0, we have for all finite subsets on S of the whole algebra, there is just a projection, a finite dimensional set algebra contained in PAP, so which goes here, such that one has these conditions. So this is really just a minor change. We have lemma. So let me call this lemma. Assume it's x minimal homeomorphism intercept. Then one, if the interior of Y is not empty, supplies space of Y is AF. So we're going to get the B, which is here. 2. That was page 5, and there was a proof on page 6 of my notes, and now I'll go on page 7. Y in X. I should say, I'm sorry, I put the wrong conditions here. I want something stronger than this. I'm going to say that Y is compact and open. And not empty. So Y and X, again, compact, open, not empty. And if I switch some integer N, and if y, h of y, up to h to the n of y are disjoint, then the characteristic function of y is more phenomenally equivalent to the characteristic function of h, capital N of y, in h of y. And the point here is that, right, if you take, well, what was up there? Right, if you take your unit area here and multiply by the characteristic function of y, which is now continuous, then you can conjugate lots of things around by that, but not everything. You get a sort of large partial asymmetry, assuming that y is small. And this statement here involves something which you can't obviously get just by using that characteristic function of y multiplied by the unitary. I guess the last lecture on the subject that I gave, and I won't go back through the details now. And 3. Is that It's P and A, zero, positive, then there exists a non-zero projection. P in C of X, such that P is Murray-Van-Neumann equivalent to a projection in CAC. And this is this is the analog here of something which is a crucial stage in all the proofs that I actually know about classification of cross products. Namely, to find a projection P like this, we're doing comparison in the original algebra, whereas hypotheses of tracial Van Til require comparison in the cross product, which a priori we don't know anything about. So we're trying to prove things about it. And again, there was some slightly tricky argument, which isn't to do that, which wasn't really new. Then the main lemma, and let me actually put it up here. I gave some sort of description of this, a heuristic description about a month ago, but it's probably been mostly forgotten by now. So here is then the lemma. Actually, I should leave. Well, I'll leave those things up for a little bit. H x to x as before. X, y, and x. For all epsilon bigger than zero, for all u in x open and non-empty, which I left out of my notes. It's not going to be true for the empty set. And all finite f in C of x, there exists a compact open set y containing little y, so in particular it's not empty, and a projection P in A sub y, that's a capital Y in that subscript, such that P A minus A P is less than epsilon for all A in now F union. I use my finite set of functions together with the standard unitary in the cross product. Two is that P A P is actually in P A sub Y P for all A in F union U. And three is that there exists a compact open set C contained in U such that one minus P is Murray-Van-Neumann equivalent to a subprojection of the characteristic function of C in the cross product. So, let me first explain why this actually finishes the proof that the cross product has tracial rank zero. So, combining this. Gives that A has a tracial rank zero. So basically, I'm going to take the set S in the first one. Is C of X union just this single unitary U. And certainly it generates the cross product of the C for algebra. well then, A, B, you'll be A sub 1, this is a 1, and 1, as this lemma, and, right, this is going to be used in the proof of that, it's AS by this lemma, and, the condition down here, condition 3, combined with this statement over here, the third one of these lemmas, ensures that one can actually make the condition 3 over here hold. All right, so it's telling you basically that 1 minus p is small in A, sorry, in C of X, so therefore it's small in A. So in other words, all I've really got to know is to prove that last one. And as usual with these things, you have to start off by choosing a bunch of epsilons. And here are the choices the epsilons will have to make. I've certainly done worse than this. So, so first, I need a metric, so let D be a metric on X giving its topology, no matter which one. Choose M0 such that I want condition 4 pi over N0 is less than epsilon over 4. So this is epsilon over here. So where does this come from? Well, if you still manage to remember things that happened a month ago, there was some sort of twisting argument involving a unitary path from, say, the identity in the 2x2 matrices to something with, I guess, 0, 1, 1, minus 1, 0. And this thing's going to make sure that the things on that are sufficiently close together. Choose delta 0, figure to 0, such that delta 0 is less than epsilon over 2, and distance from x 1 to x 2 less than 4 delta 0 implies that absolute f of x minus f of x 1 minus f of x 2 is less than epsilon over 4 for all f in capital F. Right, the set capital F is finite and the functions in it are uniformly continuous, so I can certainly do this. And then choose delta bigger than 0 with delta less than delta 0 such that distance from x1 to x2 less than delta implies the distance from h to the minus n of x0, sorry, x1, h minus n of x2 is less than delta 0. For, I think I was right mistaken here, just for n here, for n bigger than or equal to, sorry, n0, bigger than or equal to minus n minus n0. This will certainly do, might be overkill. But I think I think it's probably a mistake in my notes. I think I need a little bit more. I basically just had negative powers up to minus n0. I don't think that's quite enough.
sorry, up to N. No, I'm sorry.
Yes, I am. Basically, I mean, you can sort of see this, or you can see one reason that it should be the case by taking that projection P and taking something in C of X. Okay. Then P times C of X times P is actually contained in A sub Y.
Well.
So this is. I mean, the point is that I can have a whole AF algebra there and not just a five-dimensional algebra.
Okay, and you're only talking about elements of CX.
Well, no, I'm not, so I also have to do the unitary.
But the finite set F, the finite.
But I also need to make sure that P and UP is in there.
Yeah, right, okay, well, I see
that. But I mean, look, again, look at the definition of AY,
yeah.
Right? If P is the characteristic function of X minus Y, then PU is in there,
yeah.
Therefore PUP is in there.
Yeah. And you may have to.
I haven't chosen Y yet, but it's going to be compact open. Now, in fact, the P I choose is going to be less than or equal to the characteristic function of X minus Y.
Yeah.
But then it'll still be there. Yeah, so this is, yeah, I mean, it comes out, it simplifies things a little bit that I get exactly in there rather than, I mean, it's not important in any real sense, but it just happens to be convenient, and that's how it worked. Okay. So the next choice I have to make. Yes, okay. So now since H is minimal, this implies that forward orbits are dense. This implies that there exists an N, which is bigger than or equal to N0 plus 1, such that the distance from H to the capital N of 1 to Y is less than delta. So right, I'm taking the orbit of H of Y starting at N0 plus 1. That's a dense set, so in particular it comes arbitrarily close back to Y.
Little y,
yes. I haven't chosen a capital of Y yet. Okay, now I have to do some size control, which is basically for the purpose of making sure that condition 3 is satisfied, and also that my sets don't have large diameter. I haven't used this before back here yet, so I choose, how many of them do I want? wrong page, no. So wrong page. Where is the page I'm working on? Here it is. I think it's N. Sorry, how many do I need? N0 plus N0 plus 1. Disjoint. Non-empty. Open. Set. U. And I start the indexing at minus N0 up to U to N plus 1. Obviously, I've got N plus 2 of them contained in U. I choose R sub L. This is for N0 minus N0 less than or equal to L less than or equal to N plus 1. RL in this meaning to integer, such that h to the RL display y, and u, u L. Right, again, I'm using density of orbits. And then that goes in here. And then choose the compact open neighborhood y, again, little y. So small dot, several things happen. One of them is that h to the RL of y is contained in UL for these various, for L is there. I can certainly do that because the h to the RLs are continuous. Are their inverses are continuous, something like that. And also the diameter of h to the n of y is less than delta for minus n0 less than or equal to n less than or equal to capital N. So all of these iterates have diameter less than delta. Now I want some notation that Tn equal h to the n of y, capital Y. Set where they call this thing here. Where is it? Q0 equals characteristic function of Y. And Qn is u to the n, Q0 u to the minus n, which is the characteristic function of Tn. So these things are projections in T of X. And now, I want to note that these are orthogonal. I need one more condition here, which I have right in my notes. Yes, I have in my notes, I forgot to put up on the board. I need three things. This is the size control that goes into condition three. This one, make sure they're not too big. And I omitted one condition here, that h to the minus n0 of y, et cetera, up to h to the capital N of y, are disjoint. Yeah, we can certainly do that because the point little y is not a periodic point, and therefore a sufficiently small neighborhood when I specify a finite range, the images will be disjoint. So because those are disjoint, these things are orthogonal for, again, n in this range. So minus n0 less than or equal to n to little n less than or equal to capital N.
Is it correct? Are you saying that the UNs are disjoint? And Y is such?
Yeah, but I have these various unknown powers involved here.
Oh, there's one power system.
Yes. Uh-huh. So the purpose of this condition is that, see, when I construct my projection P, I'm not going to use the characteristic function of x minus y. I can't get away with that. Instead, P is going to be sort of like 1 minus the sum of these qn's. It's actually bigger than or equal to that. All right, but I want to make sure then that 1 minus p is small. So here I'm adding up the characteristic functions of n0 plus n plus 1 copies of y. Okay? And now I want that to be equivalent in A to a projection to the characteristic function of some subset of u. Okay, well here, I guess I should have gone. I don't need that. I only need a 1 here. One of them. So here I have n0 plus n plus 1 different images of my set y, which are disjoint and contained in u.
the sum of the QNs is then equivalent to a projection on a the characteristic function of some subset of U. So that's what these powers do. This is just some sort of size control to make condition 3 work, and has nothing to do with the rest of the argument.
Chris, I'm a little worried about the number 2
because you're suggesting that you might take P to be a characteristic function of, say, of x minus y. But then how is it going to commute with U? So if I just take that for P, then in fact I do not get this. P is going to be an element of A sub y, which is less than or equal to the characteristic function of x minus 1.
Well,
all right,
okay, and so
something
non-diagonal
for
true,
right? Yeah, so it's going to have a twist in it. I mean,
number 2 will still be true. Because
number 2 will still be true because I still have it in h of y and already p, and already characteristic function of x minus y times u times characteristic function of x minus y is in h of y. If you want to cut it down further, I'm still okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the point of that was just to show why it should not be so implausible that actually land exactly in h of y instead of only approximately in h of y.
Right, and you're going to use Bird's technique to get that
something that's nice? Yes. So 1 minus p is going to be made, well, I should draw the diagram, that's what it says to do next to my note. What board should I use for it? Here are my sets.
You might say it's not very likely we're going to be able to on the first chord. On the other hand, if that's Jordan made up for by how serious it would be if we didn't.
But I preserved one or two. So, here is so here is the point little y, and here is p0, and then they go around like this. Here is 2 minus capital n0, here is pn minus n0, and up here is Pn. So the Qs are the projections and the characteristic functions of these x. And here is, for example, P1. So what's going to happen is I'm going to start with here is Q0. I follow this around. Here is Qn for some intermediate value of n, the projection on Pn. And if I came back here, I would be in business. I don't, I come back here. But these two things are close together. I have to make sure that those are close together, but the distance was sufficiently good that it went all the way back there. That's why I have this condition here, to make sure that not only are these two things close together, but things are close together all the way back to here. And then I'm going to use Bird's technique to twist the projection here around so it ends up there. And so I have my twisted things here. Qn minus n0 is the characteristic function of Pn minus n0. But I will use instead an En minus n0. And over here I'll say this is En equals 0. And all of these things will actually happen inside a sub y. So then P will be 1 minus the sum from little n equals 0 to capital N minus 1 of EN. And in particular, notice that it's less than or equal to the characteristic function. Notice that 1 minus P is less than or equal to the characteristic function of x minus 1. P is less than the characteristic function of that. Because this is equal to 1 minus 0. And remember that T0 is equal to 1.
So where is E sub little n in the picture?
E sub little n, this is going to be E sub n. So this might take the E to be the Q's all the way out here. Up here, this is going to be, I'll be okay here. This one I'm going to leave out here, equals E n minus n 0, but I'll say E n minus n 0 plus 1 is close to, but not equal to, Q n minus n 0 plus 1. And then when I go and say further, it's going to be further away from the corresponding Q and closer to the Q down there.
Can you draw a circle around, what would happen if you drew a circle around P?
Around P? So it's basically, it's a bit hard to see what it is in here, but I can draw, I can show something which is less than or equal to P, which is the complement of all of those boxes. So I exclude all of those, exclude all of those, and all the way around here, what's left over is P. I'm saying that wrong. What's left over is less than or equal to P. But I actually include little pieces in here, where I didn't actually use for the
And you have all the ENs in the picture? Are they all in the picture?
Yes, because the ENs are the same as the QNs all the way around to here, and then they twist around and up back down there.
Okay.
So the Qs go from minus N 0 up to capital N, and the Es only go from 0 up to capital N. Because the loop actually closes.
So the complement P anyway is just very easy to see. It's part of the loop that didn't do anything at all.
The complement of P is, first of all, the slice is outside all the boxes where I didn't do anything at all. And secondly, whatever I didn't use when I extracted E, the E's from the sum of two Q's over along here.
No.
So that's not what we need at all. But in any case, P is bigger than or equal to the characteristic function of everything not inside any box.
Is this the same in principle as the application of Bernstein's definition of state by thinking of what was in the AF and beta?
Not sure, but there's one twist here which I think is actually somewhat distinct from ways this has been used before, namely that I'm using Berg's technique only on a small set, whereas in essentially all the previous applications of it, you try to cover almost the whole space. So in the typical applications, I mean, this was a comment which is somewhere further down in my notes, but which I might as well make now. In the typical application, you have a bunch of sets for Y. They are the basis of Ruffling towers. So this is the construction that got used when we showed that the A sub capital Y was an AF algebra. And so you have a bunch of sets Y, and the towers are tall, and cover the whole face. You do need to find a good structure on every one. Now, inside the cut down by the sum of the two ends, you have some finite dimensional approximations. Whereas here the approximation ended up being outside. What's left over is, well, see, the top of the tower, so the tower has to type n plus n0 plus 1. So here I've gone backwards down instead of then, you know, cut off the top and go to the bottom instead. The leftover piece is whatever didn't get covered by the E's when I made this change. In this situation, you have to make sure that n is much bigger than n0. And therefore, this thing happens only along a small portion of the tower. And thus, there is only a small set left over.
So P is small.
So this means that, so the projection, this means that P is then small.
And where does the C come from? We don't have the C.
The C. No, this hasn't been used in... this particular setup hasn't been used directly in a proof of the sort of thing which I'm thinking of, which we're talking about here. If you try to do this without the hypothesis on the map from K0 of the affine functions, then you end up having to do twice, do two tested ones of these things, and combining them in a very sneaky way. Uh-huh. And this, by the way, is essentially what Putnam originally did, even on the Cantor set.
Yeah. That's what he did?
Yes. So that part of this the argument isn't new. I mean, that's sort of the only thing which isn't new in the argument is Putnam's trick. But it's much longer to go into the details of that than to describe what's happening here. So here, I mean, this is sort of one of the simplifying pieces of the argument, namely that you can get away with discarding your Ruffin tower is allowed to be small because you can throw away what's there rather than throwing away the rest of it.
But it doesn't look as if that's captured in the statement of the P is small.
No, it's not. No, that's absolutely correct. The method is used. What you do next once you construct your Ruffin tower is not captured in the statement as well because this one was intended for the case when one minus P is supposed to be small.
Oh,
right. This lemma is intended for the use of a small Ruffin tower rather than a larger one.
Okay, but then it does say the one line of P. Well, the one minus P is the small function.
Yes, remember one minus P. That here, one minus P is the projection on the pieces of the tower. And it's insisted to be small, whereas in most applications of this, one's insisted that the projection not on the piece of the tower be small, but the projection on the rest of it be small. So that's the reverse. This is a reverse of the usual arguments. And I don't remember exactly what Pinsker was who did, but I'm sure they did not manage to get away with a thing like this. I don't know, but maybe it's interesting to check whether one could, in fact, do their argument with a thing like this. I don't know. Well, let's see. I guess I'm... So how should I proceed? Should I go on another 10 or 15 minutes and try to finish the proof, or should I start again next time? I'm sorry?
I have you going.
Yeah. Okay, so I will pick up then roughly from here. I won't remind of most of the lemmas, but I'll have to, since I haven't used most of the part two yet, I'll have to bring that back. And I'll actually write down what the things are. Maybe I'll come a little bit early and put
put the relevant estimates up on a corner of the board.
Is it listed in the paper already?
Yes, it's on the archive. Although done generally for finite dimensional compact metric spaces, and under the assumption that the map from K0 is the affine function of the trivial state space at dense range. And this piece is, it becomes trickier in a relatively small way. Namely, over the statement is basically the same, although part three certainly has to be changed. The point is that the space might be connected, so I don't have these characteristic functions. So what I do instead, there's not a single box here. There's two nested boxes. So the characteristic function of that one isn't in the P of X, the characteristic function of that one isn't in the P of X, and they're not in the algebra even. But since the, say that this is y. Since a sub y has real rank 0, a sub y has real rank 0. And therefore, one can manage to find a projection in a sub y, not in c of x anymore, which is approximately contained less than or equal to the characteristic function of y, and approximately bigger than or equal to the characteristic function of the set. And we take that to be q0. And with that change, and I mean, one actually needs several nested, I think I end up with three nested bits here, and actually finding it. With that change and the resulting complexity of notation, but no other serious changes, the statements 1 and 2 stay true with the same proof, taking this projection, which one thinks is something like that, to be Q0, and then pushing them around, and then doing the same Rolfing construction, and so on. And the heuristically speaking, although this isn't exactly how it was done, the analog of condition 3 is, well, you still basically want to say, well, that, well, you, as far as effectively contained in some open set, well, so if you have enough disjoint copies of this Y here, which have images, which are subsets, disjoint subsets of U, then when you take the images of this Q0 under them, then you get a bunch of orthogonal projections which are less than or equal to the characteristic function of U, and this is therefore small, even though the characteristic function of U is in the algebra.
So I'm not even sure I understand your application of Hurwitz technique here.
I haven't done it yet.
Yeah. Oh, okay, you're going to do it.
I have to actually write down some formulas, but I've run out of time to do it today, so it's going to have to be next week.
Okay. Well, I guess you'll answer my question next time. I mean, I just don't see the unitaries that you're trying to tie together.
I can describe roughly how it's going to work. You see,
I can just wait. I mean, it's...
Yeah, well, it's easy enough to take what's happening. It may not make more sense next time. So you see here... these two sets are, one of them is image and the other some power of A. Because they're characteristic functions, which are projections, they're equivalent to A.
Yeah, I agree.
And that lemma 2 up there shows they're actually equivalent to A sub Y.
Okay. So A sub Y is the one that... The unitary that you have in A sub y, the canonical one, is the one that you're using as your overall?
Yeah, the canonical unitary is not in A sub y, right? That was the point. It was cut down.
Yeah, okay.
So the fact that these are equivalent in A does not immediately tell you they're equivalent in A sub y, because the equivalence is implemented by that unitary and it's not there. Okay, but the point of this lemma is that yet they still are equivalent there. Of lemma 2. Part 2 of that lemma. And in fact, I mean, see, this is a sort of an important point, because if you just write down the piece, even if you just write down the piece of the canonical judiciary U, which is supposed to implement the equivalence between these two things, and you find that it is not in basic one. Even that piece isn't there. However, most of the things are. You only get in trouble when you, I mean, in A, they're all equivalent all the way around. In A sub 1, you get in trouble with only one step, right? It's either from here to here or from here to here, I forget which. But, in the step where you get in trouble because you isn't there, you don't get in trouble with the complements of those projections. And since in the AF algebra, if the complements are equivalent, then the original ones are equivalent. So there is this piece of trickery here that things, that the equivalence works out right, even though the thing which you think you want to use to implement the equivalence is not in the algebra. Once you have that.
Is this the only reason you need the AF? Is for this equivalence? Or
No. Because it's needed in order to get from this condition up here, right? I mean, right, in the definition of special like zero, it's also a five-dimensional algebra there. Now, in fact, it turns out it's enough to have a piece of algebra with special rank zero there. And similarly, for here, we doesn't need that A sub Y is AF, special rank zero is enough. Except there's an issue here, namely that you don't get threshold rank zero for the set Y. You have to take a direct limit of them when the set Y shrinks to a point. So that gives you another additional annoyance.
But threshold rank zero does not imply this equivalence of projections.
Yes, it does.
Oh, it
does. You have cancellation. Yeah, what I'm using is cancellation.
Yeah, yeah.
And calculation is true in simple situations with traditional like zero. So what happens then is that you see here, we have a copy of the 2x2 matrices. I have a projection, a fellow projection, and they're equivalent. So you put in the partial geometry and diagonalize those, and the projection is those called the matrices for a copy of the 2x2 matrices. And I have another copy here.